I'm Marty Moscoway, and welcome to Radio Times. The Pennsylvania budget approved this summer cut nearly $1 billion in spending on basic education. That left public school districts with some tough decisions about whether to lay off teachers and other staff, cut programs, look for savings elsewhere, or think of other ways of generating revenue. Today on Radio Times, we'll hear from Sam Lee, superintendent of the Bristol Township School District in Bucks County, and we'll talk with Jeff Chow, who was named Pennsylvania Teacher of the Year last year. But first, we begin with Jim Buckhite. He's the executive director of the Pennsylvania Association of School Administrators. And Jim, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be back with you, Marty.
And to our listeners, if you have a child in school this year, what are your expectations? Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Jim, can I assume or can we assume that all districts in Pennsylvania have had to make some budget cuts?
Yes, it's a very different year that students will be returning to school to see that many of the teachers, school support staff that were in the schools in previous years aren't there this year.
How many layoffs have there been across the state, do you know?
Well, we estimate, and we're still working on the numbers, in the tune of about 8,000 teachers across the state and another 8,000 vacancies of teachers that weren't filled.
So that's 16,000 either teachers laid off or teacher positions that have not been filled?
That's correct.
What is the impact then on the classroom with that number of layoffs?
Well, clearly districts have, about half the districts have reduced instructional programming. So in addition to not filling or furloughing teachers, they've cut course offerings, they've reduced extra help and tutoring programs, they've reduced elective course offerings, they've cut back on things like physical education, foreign language instruction, art and music instruction.
Can we assume that some districts have been hit harder than others with these budget cuts?
Yes. Due to the way that the state funding is distributed around the state and also due to the, I would say, lack of investment by the state in public education in the state, it has disproportionately affects those communities with the least wealth. So Pennsylvania, the state, only funds 36% of education costs in the state. That ranks 49th in the country. So the proportion of state dollars that go to districts is distributed in a way that provides the most state funds to the most needy school districts. So when there is a reduction in the allocation of funding, it hits those districts the hardest.
What are some of the other decisions that districts have had to make beyond even personnel decisions in terms of trying to figure out how to balance their budgets?
Well, they've 41% of districts across the state have delayed purchasing new textbooks. 57% have delayed purchasing new computers for student use. 31% have cut back on extracurricular activities for students. 54% have eliminated or reduced field trips for students. 35% have delayed building maintenance, capital maintenance projects in the buildings. 10% of districts across the state are closing schools. So there's some significant impacts on the education system across the state.
Let me pick up on the first thing you said. 41% of districts have delayed purchasing new textbooks. How can you open a school or start the school year without textbooks for everybody?
Well, they're probably using dated textbooks. They're using old materials, or teachers are needing to photocopy materials for students and be creative in how they provide instructional materials.
I was reading about Carlisle School District. I guess a lot of people have been reading about Carlisle in that they have brought in sheep to mow the lawn. That's one thing. But they also installed some solar panels. Help us understand what's happening in Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
Well, Carlisle, and there have been several other districts across the state used some creative ways to generate additional revenue and to save some money on their operational costs. They've installed solar panels in the field outside the high school building and actually will reduce greatly their own electrical consumption from the grid. and well, at times throughout the year will actually provide energy to the grid. But also, because these panels are out on the grassy area in the lawn outside the school, they would have to go out and mow this area frequently. So they came up with a creative solution of contracting with a local farmer to bring sheep in to actually eat the grass surrounding the solar panels, and that will save the district someplace around $15,000 a year in the cost of mowing that grass.
And that's some creative thinking, yes?
Yes, it is. But it's not a significant amount of money, but every little bit helps right now.
I was reading, actually, in State Impact Pennsylvania about a school district out in northwest part of the state, the Blackhawk School District. The school board agreed to lease 160 acres of land to Chesapeake Energy, part of the Marcellus Shale. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, districts, particularly in the northern part of the state and in the western part where Marcellus Shale is prevalent, have been investigating the leasing of their land and mineral rights to the gas companies. There's also lots of concerns about explosions and the danger that it might pose to students. So generally, districts that do this have lots of land, or it may be on land that they plan to build a building on in the future. So generally, they won't put a gas rail right next to a school building. Some parts of the state, there's also oil wells, and they've been there for years and years and years, particularly in the northwest part of the state.
And are school districts looking for oil money as well?
Well, the ones that for the most part, the oil that has been generating revenue for them have been there for years. That isn't something that's recent. The gas is something that is recent.
And I saw that Blackhawk School District, they expect from the lease to get $300,000 and then would make additional money on the royalties on those profits. So seems like an interesting way to take advantage of the natural gas in this state.
Yes, it's since we're not taxing natural gas in the state at the present time, it's certainly leaving some creative solutions up to the local school districts that have that asset to tap into.
Would you say that districts across the state have been able to cut some of this low-hanging fruit? But I'm wondering, even looking into the next year, the next academic year, a year from now, are there concerns that there are going to be further cuts?
Yes, there's districts right now are looking towards the next school year, trying to determine what the impact of any further cuts might have, or even if there's level funding. The cost of doing business in school districts increases every year, regardless of what resources the state or federal government provides to them. And so they are looking to plan. One of the interesting things that we found in the recent survey we completed is that about 76% of school districts across the state tapped into their savings account this year, essentially their fund balance, their money that they keep set aside to deal with emergencies and to take care of any cash flow issues. 76% of those districts tapped into that fund this year to balance the budget. And that money won't last. It's a one-time use. And so if further cuts happen next year, that money won't be there, and districts will need to cut even deeper than they did this year.
You mentioned that some of the districts have, in a sense, deferred maintenance, the idea that they will deal with, some of the building projects down the pike. Are you concerned that there might be some infrastructure problems?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that again, goes along with this savings account money. Districts use those funds to replace heating systems and roofs that leak and things of that nature. And so if those funds are not available and those projects are delayed, those situations are only going to get worse.
Have you had conversations with either the governor or the Secretary of Education in Pennsylvania?
I talk fairly regularly with the secretary.
And is he concerned about some of these decisions that districts are having to make?
Absolutely, he is concerned about it. And the position of the administration is that there was a $4 billion deficit, structural deficit, and they needed to address it, and the pain had to be shared across the board of all segments of government services.
There are, what, 500 school districts in Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Are people, maybe even yourself, thinking about things like consolidation?
That does come up fairly regularly and in increased frequency now. There's a discussion by a legislator in out in the southwest part of the state that has been working to actually put a referendum on the ballot in the county to ask the voters to say, should we consolidate the school districts in the county?
And I'm assuming there are some pretty small school districts in the state?
Yeah, we that's one of the things about Pennsylvania is we have, you know, go from Philadelphia with a couple hundred thousand students down to a district in Cameron County in the northwest that has 250 students.
Wow. Just to show the wide range there. Has Pennsylvania had to do this before? And by that, I mean, you know, Pennsylvania public school districts had to tighten their belt the way they are having to do this year?
Of course, in years past, but it's been nearly a generation since they've had to make the kind of cuts that they're making now.
And what do you suggest parents do?
Well, I think it's important that they advocate not only to on their own district, because as I said before, for the most part, in school districts across the state, the funding that supports the school district are locally generated. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the decisions to help support the school system need to be made locally, but parents also need to talk to their state officials about the need to ensure that students have what they need to be successful and to obtain the education they need to help support Pennsylvania's growth in the future.
And some districts have raised property taxes, yes?
Yeah, so about two-thirds of the districts across the state this year raised their property taxes. One of the challenges will be in the future, because one of the things that the legislature did was put a cap on how much districts can raise property taxes in the future without going to a voter referendum. And that will make it increasingly difficult for districts to maintain the programs that they have in place now.
And are you feeling good about the upcoming school year?
Well, we're always looking forward. It's always great to see the students entering the school with excitement and with ready to learn. And we will do the best we can to provide them what they need, given the circumstances.
Well, on that note, Jim Buckeye, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
It's been a pleasure.
Been a pleasure for us as well. Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Association of School Administrators, getting us started in this hour of Radio Times as we all get ready for the school year. And if you have a child who is in a school, we want to know what you expect this year, either from your school, from your school district, from your teacher. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We have the superintendent of the Bristol Township School District waiting in the wings. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
ChristianaCare Health System's Center for Heart and Vascular Health supports WHYY. Studies show experience makes a difference in patient outcomes. Recognized by the Society of Thoracic Surgeons, ChristianaCare cardiovascular surgeons perform more than 800 open heart procedures each year, and the team of heart specialists treats more than 8,000 total heart and vascular patients annually. ChristianaCare, with locations in Pennsylvania and Delaware. More online at christianacare.org/heartleaders.
At the heart of everything we do at WHYY is one thing: storytelling. We try to inform, engage, inspire, and connect through deep, colorful stories. And NewsWorks Tonight brings together the best reporting from our network of journalists in one smart, lively regional news magazine. Weeknights at 6 on WHYY-FM, or listen online at WHYY.org and NewsWorks.org. There's also the podcast, and you can follow NewsWorks Tonight on Twitter and Facebook. And that's the story.
This Week in This American Life. Gossip, saving lives, no kidding. And Errol Morris and I argue over what makes the perfect tabloid story. I'll just say, you know, he's wrong, I'm right. gossip is one of the many things that people talk about as a guilty pleasure, but really should just be a pleasure. From Public Radio International, this week.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We are talking about the new school year, and joining us now is Dr. Samuel Lee, superintendent of Bristol Township School District. That school district is in southern Bucks County, borders Philadelphia, and like other districts across the state of Pennsylvania, has had to make some budget cuts. And Dr. Lee, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you here. Excuse me. And how many schools in your particular district?
13.
13. And they range from what, elementary to high school?
That's correct. We have 9 elementary, 2 middle, freshman academy, and Harry S. Truman High School.
And when does school start?
We started yesterday.
Oh, you did?
So it's new year for us.
It is new year for you. Now, I know that your district has had to make some cuts. Originally, it was $4 million, and then it was taken down to $3 million. Is that right?
That's correct.
And how did you go through the process of figuring out the kind of budget cuts that you were going to have to make?
Well, we became acutely aware of the potential financial distress we could be faced with, I guess, not much later than this time last year. So we started what became a long, trying planning process to accommodate what we perceived or anticipated to be a significant financial shortfall.
And this was obviously before the new governor had proposed his budget cuts.
That's correct. And upon notification or announcement of that budget, our worst fears became reality. And our plans had to come into play. Those plans included elimination or curtailment of a lot of our electives at the high school level, elimination of our freshman athletic programs, extension classes for remediation in language and mathematics, which had proven over time to be incredibly beneficial and helpful to our students and had reaped an incredible amount of success across our district, in particular in our high school.
What was the thinking that went into making those decisions? And I should say, and we got from your office, that you were able to keep full-day kindergarten, your ninth grade academy, and your arts and music courses. What was the thinking that went into what could stay and what could go?
Well, benefit, impact, potential impact, and a lot of long-range planning. Of course, our hope was to maintain as many of these programs as we possibly could, given the financial constraints we were engaged with. So we basically had a rank, rate, and we had our own rubric, in-house rubric that we developed that we eventually communicated and conveyed to our board in public and sought input. We had a number of public budget development sessions, and we really, really paid attention to our community. And fortunately, we were able to recover some funding to maintain full-day kindergarten. We moved, as Jim Buckheit spoke about, a lot of our savings into our general fund balance to manage this coming or current school year now. So as you mentioned, we did salvage full-day kindergarten. That program on its face is incredibly beneficial and popular in our community. It actually, over time, saves a significant amount of money, as we're able to identify students that may need some help, remediation, and attend to their educational issues, which defray costs and enhance student learning moving forward.
By investing in that early education. When you met with parents and you had a number of public meetings, what was the tone like? What was the atmosphere like? What did parents want?
They wanted the best for their kids, and that's not any different than what we wanted as a district or community. I was sad to say that the financial situation facing us provided nothing good for kids or our students, and there's a possibility that things weren't going to get better, and we had to plan for this new reality that was facing us. We had honest, candid conversations. The community listened, we listened, we exchanged information, and the best thing to come of this process was the commitment that the community had to this school district and the school district and the Board of Education back to the community. We're all in it together, really, in the interest of our kids.
Well, I noticed that property taxes were increased in your district.
They were. The board opted to increase property taxes up to the Act 1 index limit, and I know Jim talked a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. And it was a challenge, and it's it continues to be a challenge here in a very, very in a community that was hit very hard by our current economic situation. Unemployment is probably higher here than the state average, and we have real estate movement is non-existent, flat out stagnant, which limits and minimizes revenue coming back to the township and school districts. So our revenue sources are limited, and they're not improving.
In fact, I read somewhere that about half of the students in your district qualify for a free lunch program.
That's correct.
Which I think tells us a little bit about this district.
It's most people come from modest means, they're challenging with the day-to-day, let alone minimizing opportunities and options for their children and our students.
I am interested, though, in the decision to save arts and music programming. What was, again, the thinking that went into that?
Well, it's a pillar of our community, to be quite honest with you. Our high school band gets a lot of play. They're talented. It provides a lot of opportunities for a lot of kids. It engages our students in situations and in educational circumstances that they may not be able to otherwise be involved with had it not been for the school district. And another thing I'd be remiss if I didn't point out was that the commitment from the school district to the community and back to us was really highlighted this past budget development season. Through the generosity of our bargaining units, each and every employee here at the Bristol Township School District opted to freeze their wages for this year in order that we did have the opportunity to maintain our program and the quality of such.
I want to pick up on that, but I also want to give a shout out to the Harry S. Truman High School, because that's the high school that you referred to that has such a well-received and well-regarded arts program.
Yeah, it's a pillar of our community. It brings an incredible amount of pride here to Bristol Township, and it also provides opportunities to our students and families that they may not have available to them outside of the school district.
Because parents might not be able to afford a private piano lesson or something like that.
Correct.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you, and that's Dr. Sam Lee, superintendent of Bristol Township School District. And again, that's in southern Bucks County, borders Philadelphia, and one of many districts, or actually all districts across the state of Pennsylvania, that have had to cut their budgets this year, had to make some tough choices. And again, if you have a child entering school or has entered school, what are your expectations this year? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Dr. Lee, you mentioned the Teachers Union, the Bristol Township Education Association, and it sounds like some amicable negotiations over some tough issues, which is in direct contrast to some of the publicity that we saw in other states and other districts.
There is a great relationship currently between our Teachers Association, administration, and school board, and community as well. They extend a great deal of effort to work with our kids, are proud to do it, and I think our community reciprocates that affection and consideration back to the school district and the teachers.
So this pay freeze for a year, this was something that was pretty amicably agreed to?
Yeah, it was a conversation. Really, that's how it came about. There was a request, I guess, after the governor's budget was announced by the PSEA president to ask their membership and local associations to consider that. And it wasn't much later than that announcement was made public, or maybe even before. I'm not really recounting the exact timelines, that Mary Berman, our association president, and I had that conversation. Of course, there were some details to work out and ensuing conversations, but it was all in the interest of a common goal, to maintain the quality and the progress that this district has made.
Have you had to lay off teachers or furlough teachers?
Unfortunately, we have. We had to furlough 25 teachers as of last June. That was terrible, and it was traumatic, and probably the worst day of my professional career.
Really?
Yeah, it was. You know, you bring these people in, they commit to the process, they commit to the kids, the community, and you're going to tell them you no longer require their services. For no other reason other than we can't afford it. It was incredibly challenging. The good news is we've been able to restore 16 of those people back to positions, albeit not where they left back in June, but we've had some late retirements, some resignations, and some leaves. So we have been able to bring some teachers back, and we're excited and happy about that.
Did you and have you been conferring with other superintendents about the kind of decisions that they've had to make and how they've dealt with some of these difficult choices?
Absolutely. We have a really close-knit group of superintendents here in Bucks County, all of them incredibly talented educators. So we do stay connected, and we had been connected in significant and consistent ways throughout the budget development process, and we were all walking the same road, really.
Do you talk to the students about some of the tough choices that you've had to make? Are they included in some of these conversations? And I ask that because, you know, these are adult decisions but oftentimes kids know what adults are doing and thinking.
Yeah, I agree with you. Sometimes they actually are more connected
exactly
to the issues than we are.
Exactly.
So I would have been remiss if we didn't connect with the students. We did. And you know what? If we missed something, they connected with us.
Is that right?
In our budget development process, we had a number of dates and events where we had over 300 people, and a great deal of them were students. They were interested in maintaining the quality of the programs that they were accustomed to. They were also interested in maintaining the quality and interest of their futures, and not to mention fun. And I mentioned the band a little bit, and our arts program, in my opinion, is second to none. It's nationally regarded. We heard from those people. We heard from athletes. We heard from people who had benefited, students had benefited during their tenure here, and had been offered and availed opportunities because of their education here at Bristol Township.
And were students able to maybe find things or find money that you and others didn't see?
Yeah, they're pretty clever.
Yes, they are.
We did. Again, we did have some incredibly candid conversations, some of them in public, but that's okay. It was helpful. And what we've done moving into this year is we've availed the option to inform and help us find inefficiencies or redundancies in our operations. People can contact us directly through an email address. So it's going to be an ongoing process.
What kind of support do you think teachers need? And I ask that. I come from a family of teachers. I know a lot of teachers, and while all of them love their jobs, they also talk about just the adverse conditions that they're working under these days.
Yeah, I agree. No question about it that public education is under incredible stress. And teachers, they are on the front lines. They're at ground zero of the stress. On a good day, with support and resources and program, their jobs are incredibly challenging. Mm-hmm. But it's also incredibly important. And that's our charge here as a district. It's a charge our community and our Board of School Directors has taken up, to do absolutely anything and everything we can to support the teachers, to maintain the programs, and move our kids forward.
What do you look for in a teacher?
I think a teacher's got to like kids.
Got to start there, right?
Yeah, that's job one, isn't it? And you look for potential, especially with young teachers, some background, some pedagogy, some content area knowledge, and again, I'll come back to it, a sincere interest in working with kids. Short of that, you have a challenging career, even brought with more challenges than the best days.
I mean, it sounds like you've had a challenging year, but perhaps an instructive year as well, in that all these groups were able to come together to make some tough decisions?
Yeah, no doubt about it. Challenges for sure. But a vast majority of our challenges came from outside the confines of this community and this district. What we implore each and every one of us to do is get away from the noise, especially starting yesterday. It's all noise. It's all distractions. Our charge is to continue with our mission, continue to improve, and continue to take care of our kids.
And the role of parents, I mean, parents play such an important role in a child's education. And what do you want? Do you want anything different from your parents this year?
A vast majority of our parents are engaged and active with their child's education. Really, if I could implore everybody just to keep it going, stay connected with us, help us help each other.
And what's your school day like for you?
For me, in my capacity as superintendent?
Indeed.
Well, I can tell you with authority that no 2 days are ever the same. My best days involve direct interaction with students. That's where I'm from. I'm a teacher by trade, and I enjoy kids. I have a number of kids at home and 6,300 all day, every day here. But it's making sure that my primary responsibility is to make sure that our teachers, our staff, our support staff, our operations group have the resources and capacities to attend to our kids.
And we're almost out of time here. What did you used to teach?
I was a social studies and special education teacher.
And do you miss the classroom?
Every day.
Every day?
Yeah. I enjoy what I do now, but teaching was something I truly and really enjoyed as well.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times, and good luck this year as well.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
Indeed, and that's Dr. Samuel Lee. He's the superintendent of Bristol Township School District, and that's a school district in southern Bucks County, borders Philadelphia, the second of three guests in this hour of Radio Times as we get ready for school. And we have Jeff Chow waiting in the wings. He's a sixth grade teacher in the Abington Township just outside of Philadelphia. And again, if you have a child in school, what are your expectations for this year? We do want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. Continuing education at PAFA has art classes and workshops this fall in drawing, painting, sculpture, printmaking, and more. Featuring Saturday classes for high school students, art appreciation in the PAFA Museum, and master classes with classical realist artist and author Juliet Aristides and noted painters Bill Scott and Stuart Shills. PAFA CE, a community of artists of all ages and levels. Classes begin September 8th. For details, pafa.edu/CE.
On the next Fresh Air, All You Can Eat Week continues with some food memories from food writer and editor Ruth Reichel. Also, why chopping onions makes you cry and how to fry the perfect French fry. Russ Parsons talks about the science of cooking. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. The BP oil spill cleanup uncovered Native American artifacts. What do they tell us about early inhabitants of the Gulf? Also, Ry Cooder imagines John Lee Hooker running for president, an officer's satirical take on the bank bailout, among other things, on his new CD. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and we are getting ready for the school year. And again, if you have a child in school, what are your expectations for this year? Do give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Last fall, Jeff Chow was named Pennsylvania Teacher of the Year for 2011. He teaches sixth grade at Highland Elementary School. That's in Abington Township, Pennsylvania, and joins us on Radio Times. And Jeff Chow, nice to have you with us on the show.
Thank you, Marty. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome, and congratulations on Teacher of the Year.
Oh, thank you.
What are your duties?
Often I go around to universities and talk to pre-service teachers about what they might face when they come into the classrooms. I go and do in-services for teachers around the state to sort of pass around different ideas for best instruction. And I also coordinate with other Teachers of the Year from other states to get the sense of what the national picture is like, and then talk to the Department of Education a little bit and help them guide where they're going.
And how many years have you been a teacher?
I'll be entering my 15th year this year.
And have you always taught sixth grade?
No, I've also taught third grade and fifth grade, but primarily I've taught sixth grade.
Is that a grade that you feel you can connect with best?
In a lot of ways, it's my favorite grade because the kids are right on the cusp, in our district anyway, of going on to the junior high. And that's where a lot of their biggest challenges are that they'll face. They haven't made a transition like that before. A lot of real-world issues start hitting them there. And so I'm sort of that last person they'll remember. And it's a good way for me to kind of connect with them and then help them navigate their path through some of those adversities.
And has the school year started yet?
For the teachers, it has started. The students won't come back until next week on Wednesday.
And how did you spend your summer?
I spent my summer doing a lot of in-service work, trying to think of different ideas how to bring in some new strategies to teach the students. I spent a lot of time creating new lessons, sort of revamping ones that I knew didn't quite work last year. And so that's pretty much what I did all summer.
Now, when you teach sixth grade, do you teach all courses?
I do. Yeah, I'm still in the elementary school, so I teach all core subjects with the exception of art, music, and gym.
And I know you use technology a lot, and it seems to me talking or teaching this generation of students, you have to be technologically plugged in, yeah?
Yeah, I think absolutely. It's the best way to touch base with them. They're more receptive to it. But also, I think for their futures, they will be using technology on a, if not daily, mm-hmm. hourly basis in their futures. And more of their career paths will involve technology. So I think it's important for schools to incorporate more of that in our instructional methods so that our students are prepared for their futures.
And how do you use it with your students? How do you use technology with your students?
We do a lot of things. We have a blog online where we discuss current events and news articles. We have a podcast where the kids have sort of their own little radio show so they can tell their parents what they're doing on a daily basis, but also use it as a way to sort of publish some of the work that they've been doing. And then we're starting to sort of tweet daily updates on what we're what we'll be doing, and so the parents can stay informed.
Is it also another way of reaching students that may not be traditional learners?
It is a great tool for that because a lot of students are sort of disenchanted with sort of the standard paper and pencil style of learning that I think we grew up with. And when you add a little sort of bell and whistle of technology, it piques their interest a little bit and encourages them to take a more active part in their learning.
And do you find some kids by sixth grade have either given up on themselves or are sort of, checking out of education?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. And for me personally, that's my greatest challenge, is trying to reinvigorate those students who've sort of given up on themselves, who think that school isn't really for them, or who think they just can't learn, and to try to convince them to believe in themselves is really the hardest thing that I do every year.
So if we were a fly on the wall in your classroom, what would we see?
Hopefully, you'd see, the students really engaged in what we're learning, trying to help them think about things in new and innovative ways. I also try to sort of break down some of those traditional barriers between subjects and help the students see that, you know, what we do in reading or what we do in math, they're all interrelated. And when you get out into the real world, you're almost never totally working within one subject, and you have to be well-versed in everything.
And how much freedom do you have as a teacher in a classroom to, you know, expand and explore these various subject matters?
I don't have as much freedom as I used to have. I used to have quite a bit, but as the pressures have come down from sort of the federal level to have all of our students achieve in reading and math, we've spent a lot more time trying to make sure that our reading and math programs are really, really solid. And those are really wonderful things that we're doing. But at the same time, I think it's taken a little bit away from some of the more innovative things that we can do in the classrooms.
I was speaking with a superintendent and actually the executive director of the Pennsylvania Association of School Administrators earlier before we got to you, Jeff, and they were talking about all the district cuts and the effect on various schools across the state. How about for your school? How were you impacted by the cuts?
Well, I think in Abington, we're a special case. We're really lucky in a lot of ways. So the school board here had great foresight and sort of saw that this was coming. So they had a lot of money saved to sort of augment that. And then similar to what Dr. Lee, I think the previous guest had stated, the teachers and the secretaries and the bus drivers and the custodians and everybody took a pay freeze to help make sure that we could sort of meet our budget this year. And then the community jumps in whenever we need to, and they help provide some extra funding when we can't quite make it to some of our goals. For example, in my school, we always run a great after-school program. I coach Ultimate Frisbee and Chess Club and basketball, and the funding for that was sort of a question mark, and the community from Highland Elementary really came through and helped provide that funding for us.
And that's Jeff Cho. He was named Pennsylvania Teacher of the Year for 2011, teaches sixth grade at Highland Elementary School in Abington Township, the third of three guests in this hour of Radio Times as we get ready for school. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. So how long have you been playing Ultimate Frisbee?
I've been playing since college, since 93 when I first went to college.
And is that a sport?
It is. It's a little bit like football where you're trying to score in an end zone, but you pass a frisbee instead. And unlike football, you can't really run with it once you catch it.
When did you become interested in teaching?
I was originally going to be a doctor when I went into school. That was sort of the vision my parents had for me. And then when I was volunteering just on the side at the Free Library in West Philly, I was setting up a sort of an after-school program for the kids there. I realized the greater impact I could make with those kids because I started to think about the people that I might see in sort of a hospital setting. Sometimes it might be too late to really help them, where if I could work with kids who are younger and younger, teaching them sort of preventative things and helping them write their lives there, that might be a better way to make a difference than seeing them in the emergency rooms.
And how did your parents feel about that?
At first, they were a little hesitant with that decision because of from our culture of being from Chinese descent. They didn't appreciate sort of the lack of respect that sort of permeates society here, comparatively to a Chinese society. So they were worried that I was choosing that sort of path. But once they saw the difference that I was making for my students, I think they really appreciated it as well.
And have you had memorable teachers? I mean, teachers that just either spoke to you in a way that, you know, to be dramatic here, changed your life, or just have been an influence over you?
Absolutely. I had two amazing teachers through my career. I had my third grade teacher was Mrs. Johnson, and she, at the time, I was trying to sort of get away with sort of the bare minimum, and she just wouldn't let me get away with that. And she saw that I could do better and really made sure that I reached my potential. And then senior year of high school, I had Mrs. Sampson as my AP English teacher, and she really taught me to see the beauty in every situation and to really appreciate literature and to to see that when things seem sort of dark or when things seem like they're hardest, that there's often something underlying there that, that can be really positive and that can be a force for all of us to latch on to.
And you have you stayed in touch with those teachers?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm originally from Colorado, so unfortunately it's a little harder to stay in touch with them because that's where they are. But every time I go back there, I make sure I have lunch or coffee with them.
And that's where email comes in too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it definitely helps.
Because I know I was reading a bit about you that you stay in touch with your students as well for the same kind of reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and partly because I know how difficult the modern times are for our kids as they're growing up. They're faced with challenges at an earlier date than we ever were, and so I try to make sure my door is always open for them in case they maybe are faced with a tough decision or maybe made a mistake. They have somebody to come back and talk to that can help guide them through some of those rougher situations.
And you find kids want to talk to you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, often I think they. I think they don't really appreciate it all the time when they're in the elementary school, just how great their lives are and to appreciate sort of the innocence that they have at that time. And I think lots of times when they get up to the high school or even beyond, they want to kind of search back for that, those kinds of happier times where they didn't quite have as much responsibility.
That's interesting. But it also underscores what we hear about education, which is that it is about many things, but at its core, it's about a relationship.
Absolutely. You know, I think every teacher out there really, we come into this because we love kids. And, you know, we were speaking about some of these harder economic times. Mm-hmm. I know every teacher I know is doing everything they can to make sure that these economic times don't really affect our kids as much as possible. So, you know, all of us are buying extra supplies for our kids when we know that the districts can't provide them. And when our families are not doing well economically, you know, we provide as much as we can for them. So I know last year my school had backpacks full of supplies for kids who we knew couldn't get them themselves as they came in.
Is it a hard time, though, to be a teacher? I hear your love and enthusiasm for your profession and for the students as well. But there seems like there are pressures just coming from almost every which way.
It is a difficult time because we have really lofty goals. We want every child to achieve, and we know that every child can learn. And those kinds of lofty goals require more difficult efforts. And so I think because of that, it's put a little bit more of a public focus on what we do. And unfortunately, there are a few schools out there that aren't doing quite as well, mm-hmm. or who frankly maybe need some extra support that some of the fundings may have just been cut. And so I think because of the goals that we have don't always sort of match with the funding and the abilities that we're sort of given, it makes it a difficult job.
And what do you do on the first day of school?
I do a lot of trying to make my class feel as if they can start to become a community, because the more I can get them to rely on each other and learn from each other and listen to each other, the better chance they have when it comes to everything in life. You know, if I teach something in class and they're not quite getting it from me, they have then 19 other people that they can kind of turn to get a different perspective on it. And then, again, as we were speaking earlier about some of the struggles that they face later, yeah. If they have these other 19 or 20 people who they feel close to, if they have a tough life situation that they're facing, they have some other peers that they can turn to as well in addition to the adults in their lives.
And I'm happy to hear that there are, what, 20, 21 kids in the class?
Right now, luckily, in Abington, our class size has stayed relatively small, but
wow.
That's definitely something that may change as the economic times get tougher.
I want to pick up on your focus on technology and the use of technology, and I wonder, since you've been teaching for 15 years, whether part of the goal of education, because there is so much information out there, is teaching students how to find the information that they need.
I think in a lot of ways the focus of education has changed a little bit. When we were going to school, it was a lot about attaining a certain type, a certain amount of knowledge, mm-hmm. where that's still important now, but we also have to teach our kids to find information better, because they're faced with such powerful tools where they can reach out through the internet and find over a million websites on any given topic.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is 95% of those websites won't be very good or won't be the exact thing that they want. So teaching them strategies to filter through all of the information that they have at their fingertips now is just as important as the information that we're giving them.
I was interested in what your classroom looks like and perhaps even sounds like during the day. And are kids in desks? Are they on the floor? Are they working in groups? How do you manage your class that way?
Through the day, we'll probably do a little bit of all of that. I think it's important to not have the students in any one situation, especially in an elementary school where I have them for almost 8 hours, I think, through the entire day. And so if you just have them sitting in desks the entire time, it's a little hard for the kids to learn. So we do a lot of group work. We do a lot of interactive elements to try to stimulate learning through a different way, because we know a lot of kids don't learn just through reading or just through listening to me. But if I can help them act something out, it might help them learn something better. I use a lot of music. I teach world history, for example, and I try to bring in music from around the world whenever we're studying a different culture or a different time period. And so we do a lot of different things through the classroom.
And at night, are you doing your homework like your students?
Absolutely. You know, the job of a teacher, unfortunately, is not just sort of an 8 to 3:30 sort of job. I bring home a lot of extra things to not only to grade, but also I try to refine every lesson as I teach it that day. I'll go home that night trying to think how I might be able to do it a little bit better the next time. I'll even wake up in the middle of the night at 3:30 in the morning or something and have a new idea and have to quickly jot that down.
Well, I think I see why you were named Pennsylvania Teacher of the Year for 2011. Jeff Chow, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. And he teaches sixth grade at the Highlands Elementary School. That's in Abington Township in Pennsylvania. The third of three guests in this hour of Radio Times. We also spoke with Dr. Sam Lee, superintendent of the Bristol Township School District. And we began our conversation with Jim Buckhite, executive director of the Pennsylvania Association of School Administrators, all three of them getting us ready for the new school year. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Stay with us. We've got another action-packed hour for you in the second hour of Radio Times. We'll be right back.